This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, and we are joined by special guest tonight, Kai Harley, a recent promoted to Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant to the General Manager. How you doing, Kai?
I'm doing good. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I know that Football Administration has the same 24-hour rule, so we won't spend a lot of time, but I mean, we got to spend a little bit of time. I mean, the win over Carolina, new offense, you know, a new stadium, a new locker room, new turf, 47-10. That atmosphere on Monday had to have just been, you know, just a great, great feeling.
Yes, look, it was a great feeling, a great experience, and yet it's the beginning of a new year, new experience. It's good to get off to a good start, and yet it's good to get a win and know that you still have stuff to work on and stuff you can improve on. And yet we're excited about what we can do this season.
Now, I'm only going to ask this question because I talked to special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Darren Rizzi last night, and he mentioned that he was watching the Dallas-Cleveland game after he got back. And I know that for you and for him and everybody there, it was about 80 hours of work last week pre-Carolina.
Yep.
And then you win the game, and you go home to your family, and you get some downtime, and you flip on Dallas and Cleveland. Now, I get it. It's your next opponent. What did you do Sunday afternoon?
And that's exactly what I did. I'm fortunate to have my father living down here with us. So he attended the game, and I brought him back to where he's staying at, and went back home. And obviously my wife got the kids ready for school the next day. And as soon as I got settled in, I turned on the game and started seeing what we have to prepare for next week.
And that's kind of where I was going, is that, man, wives and family are their angels. They live the season just like coaches, just like administration, just like operations. And, you know, you get some downtime, but hey, football, it's football season, right? It is what it is.
Well, downtime is that elusive thing for us. And we wouldn't be able to do what we do without our loved ones who take the mantle for us and take charge of the home and do a lot of the things that we can't divert our attention to during the year. So it's a credit to them for putting up with most of us.
There is only one team right now that I can, off the top of my head, that certainly just one team that is preparing for Dallas and preparing for Francine. And I know it's a moving target and it's a very fluid situation, but it's also very challenging for a team and an administration, because you're trying to make decisions and you really don't know until maybe 24 hours, but then that window's closed. It's not a storm that came across from the Atlantic. It's one that developed in the Gulf. And so it presents its own challenges. And so I would imagine that minute by minute, hour by hour, the team is adjusting what it wants to do this week.
Look, that would be correct. And I would say that this isn't for the faint of heart, if you will. And, you know, we have a lot of experience and a lot of good people around here. It's a total team effort, you know, to be able to put us in the best position to be able to focus on Sundays and be able to win. And, you know, in years past, we've had situations where we've had to evacuate. They've had situations where we've had to shelter in place or move the practice schedule up or back. You know, but it is a constant monitoring, constant communication amongst our entire staff to make sure that we're able to do everything we need to do to, one, first and foremost, keep everybody safe and secure and make sure their families are safe and secure while simultaneously being able to do what our jobs are, because absent any sort of catastrophe, I mean, the game's going to go on. So, you know, the league's not going to give us extra time to prepare absent, you know, something catastrophic happening. So we all have to do what we can within the time constraints that we have in order to put our best foot forward on Sunday.
And really, tomorrow is the most impactful, right? Because the team would be off today. Dennis said last night the plan was to have a Zoom call with the team irrespective and kind of, you know, look at things. But really, and then everything goes as planned. By Thursday, this thing is on out and hopefully back to normal operations. So it's really just Wednesday, but I can't just say just Wednesday because Wednesday is a, you know, a very important day of work for your team. But that's really what we're talking about, right?
Well, not necessarily. I would say, yes, tomorrow is very important. And yet, as we all know and have experienced in the past, some of these storms can be unpredictable. And you don't necessarily know what the aftermath is going to be. So this minute by minute, hour by hour, you know, communication, observation of what's going on continues. And that'll continue on through the night into, you know, tomorrow, into tomorrow evening, into Thursday morning. So we have to be prepared for any and all circumstances. So, you know, hopefully the storm comes through here fairly quickly and everybody remains safe and we can get back to work on Thursday. But, you know, if there's, you know, flooding, power outages or something like that, we have to be ready to adjust our schedules to account for those things.
Can you talk a little bit about, you've been with the organization 17 years, you've been in the NFL, I think this is your 23rd season, if you just look, you know, overarching, the differences of your job, you know, from an administration VP and everything that you did from an administration, it's just a word change from administration to operations, kind of your job description and how it changes for you.
I mean, look, when it comes to administration versus operations, I think, you know, from the outside world, it's more administrative is all of the paperwork. And yet when it comes to operations, there's a little bit more involved in that. It's still being aware of all the paperwork, meaning contracts, correspondence with the league, correspondence with the NFLPA, rules, regulations. But just what all does it entail to run the operations of a football club? So, you know, that can be anything from something with the training staff, the equipment room, the domes, the fields, you know, to personnel related issues. So, you know, it's really just having a finger and a pulse on everything that's going on within the football operations.
Enjoy it. Differently, I know you enjoy it, but I mean it's you know more responsibility, closer to the operations side. I mean, something you I think when you started, I mean, very first started, you were like a player personnel analyst. So
analyst,
it's not something that's foreign or new, but I just wanted, you know, enjoying that this new kind of tenure, if you will.
I mean, look, you always enjoy getting more responsibility and being able to touch other aspects of your program. And yet I'll continue to say that it's a team effort and nobody here does it alone. And I think we have a great group of individuals across the organization, all working towards the same goals of trying to win a championship and bring the Lombardi home to Louisiana. But with that, I would say the thing that's most, you know, that I get out of this job is things are different. You know, there's a new challenge every day. There's a quote unquote fire to put out every day. And that's what's exhilarating. And you're competing every day for something, you know, and you're competing to be the best at what you do in some way, shape or form every single day. And every weekend you get a chance to test how your week of prep and everything else went and what all everyone had to contribute to your team winning that Sunday. So being able to have those moments where you're studying, if you will, you know, during the week, and then you get tested on the weekend, you know, where you really get a instant measurement, instant barometer of where you're at compared to everybody who you're competing with. You know, I think that's very exhilarating.
Need to take a break. We'll come back after this. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We are talking with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations and the Assistant General Manager to Mickey Loomis. When you look back a little bit at Irvine and from July 22nd really to August 18th or 19th, depending on what time everybody got home, and the amount of time and work together, I don't know if it was like this for you guys. We talked about it with the team, but you know, you're always at work. I mean, when your feet hit the ground from the bed in your room, you were at work. And I just remember one time I saw you and Michael and Jeff Ireland standing off to the side, you know, team is on the other field, and you guys looked like Jeff had been through a battle. I hadn't shaved. And I mean, it felt like this was an enormously busy, successful. There were a lot, you know, injuries to position groups that you had to bring, offensive line, wide receivers, DB that you were bringing in. And now I don't want to say camp bodies, that's disrespectful. Not to mention some of these guys, Kevin Austin, you know, made the team, right? He made it all practice. So, but it just felt like it was a very busy training camp. And because you guys were always there, always together and always working, it must have felt like that.
I mean, look, I would say every training camp is going to be busy. And yet when you move your entire operation to another state, that entails a lot of logistics and a lot of people. And, you know, it's a credit to a lot of people on our operations staff to be able to put that together. And it's a credit to Mrs. Benson to provide us the resources to do so and provide the ideal training environment when we can't be at home. And yet it's a long period of time to be away from your family. And yet there's a reason for it. There's a rationale for it. If we didn't think it was the best thing to put us in the best opportunity, in the best position to win, then we wouldn't do it. So a lot of times it takes a certain amount of sacrifice to obtain the things that you want in life. And, you know, that's part of it. So yeah, there's long days and long nights, but it's what we all signed up for. And it's the sacrifice needed to get the job done.
Probably don't, at least in my estimation, get enough credit, and I'm talking about the entire player personnel administration, for being over the cap, which is kind of an annual thing that we're somewhat used to. I'm not sure what it would feel like not to be, you know, 75 or 100 million over. But I say that to say that you were still able in 2024 to bring in Chase Young, Willie Gay, Kalik Hudson, Will Harris, Kendall Vickers, Cedric Wilson, Equanimeous St. Brown, Kevin Austin, Lucas Patrick, Ali Udo, Kyle Herger, Shane Lemieux. That doesn't sound like a team that was 75, you know, whatever million over the cap. And I think that's an impressive list of people. You're humble, as everybody on this organization, but that was, to me, kind of overlooked, especially the quantity of people that you were able to bring in to make this football team better.
I mean, look, what I'll say is I'll echo some things that Mickey has said in the past is, you know, some of the being over the cap by X amount of dollars a year is a byproduct of being a competitive and successful team for a number of years. And when you draft well, when you get good free agents, and they cost money, and they want to be rewarded, and many of these guys have earned the right to be rewarded. So when they're trying to keep things together, then there's going to be a cost associated with that. And yet it's also a credit to our scouting staff and our coaching staff of, you know, of all the individuals that you mentioned. They're all at a variety of spots on the pay scale. Right. There's some obviously that are higher than others. And yet we found people that can contribute in a variety of different areas that all come in at a certain pay scale. And in the grand scheme of things, you need everybody at every level in order to build a championship caliber team. And you need to find those contributions where you can. And it's a credit to our coaching staff of saying, hey, we don't care how you got here. If you're good enough to help us win, then you're going to be here.
And we're going to be speaking a little later in the show with Bruce Allen, longtime NFL executive. And so we're going to talk a lot about the cap. I wanted, if you can, because as we look to the future and even look to 2025, the cap somewhere $273 million to $280, depending on what you look at. But from a dead cap situation, I think the Saints, I hate to give numbers because then, you know, but it is what it is. I think it's $16 million, something like that. But it's really Mike Thomas and Jameis Winston. I think the number three on the list of dead cap money is Josiah Ezeerum. And he's like $73,000. I mean, you know, right? That's petty cash. But kind of explain for the listening audience, kind of the dead cap, how it works, because that's something that you, it is what it is. You can maneuver signing bonuses and contracts and stuff like that, but kind of how that impacts the team, the dead cap.
Well, dead cap basically, I'll try and simplify it, is money that you've already committed or paid for players that are no longer on your roster. So in every team in the league is going to have a certain level of what we call dead cash, you know, dead cap. You know, so signing bonus proration for an illustration. If you gave a guy he had a 4-year contract and you gave him $4 million to sign, well, only $1 million of that counts in each year of that contract, right? So if that player was cut or traded after year one, you have $3 million sitting out there from the final 3 years of that contract that you've paid already, is already sitting out there, but hasn't counted against your current year's cap. So all of that's going to come forward, and that would be what would be considered dead. So whether it's a undrafted rookie free agent who you may have given, you know, $6,000 to $10,000, or whether it was a high price free agent that you gave millions of dollars, there'll be a certain amount of dead cap that sits out there. So as best you can, you want to try and minimize it as best you can. But certainly, as players, you know, come and go, you're going to have to deal with that. And as the cap grows, the percentage of the cap that takes up, you hope to be less and less as the years go by.
We'll have more with Saints executive Kai Harley after this break. You are listening to the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are speaking with Saints Senior Vice President of Football Operations and Assistant to the General Manager, Kai Harley. And if you kind of look at how the league has kind of moved, it feels like they did some common sense things in the past few years. Most recently, there was always this kind of the teams juggling to do, putting players on IR, having to carry them on the 53, then putting them on the IR. It was kind of a shell game. But it's like the NFL finally said, you know, common sense says, they're already doing it. And they did. And I applaud it. They said teams can take two players, put them on IR on cut day, and they have to wait 4 weeks. But it just felt like, man, that's kind of good to see that there's some, you know, they see a problem, fix the problem.
Yes, look, that was a very welcome change, because what you're referring to is there was a rule that at the final cut, you know, you might have had two players, three players who you knew you were going to put on IR. But if you put them on IR on the day of the final cut, then they were ineligible to return to you that season. So basically, you would cut somebody who you knew you wanted on the roster, and you would cut them, then wait 2 days, a day and a half, put the other players on injured reserve, and then sign that player back.
If that person had not gotten signed, so you were putting,
correct,
you were, you know, leveraging somebody maybe you really wanted on your team and just hoping that he can clear a waiver. So that's what, yes, I mean. It was like, it was unfortunate.
Yeah. You're leveraging the relationship and hoping that the relationship is good enough and the player's vision of where he's at on the roster is good enough that he's not going to sign somewhere, in the interim. In addition to trying to balance out what you just referred to a minute ago when we're talking about dead cap. So, you know, you're not necessarily doing that with somebody that's going to present dead cap issues. So that limits the pool of players that you would look at to think about doing that with. And yet I would say, like, this is a start to addressing some of those things. And there are some other aspects, you know, that we would be, you know, we'd be happy if the league changed. And yet this is a good start. So, you know, it's two players, you know, could it be three, four? You know, two's better than zero. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Incrementally. And that's kind of, we think of, okay, the season starts and everything ends, but it's not. I mean, right before the season, there was, again, it was an issue with practice squads and that kind of emergency third quarterback, and the players union vetoed it like right in late August. So there's, and which basically reverts it back to 2023. And it was, I think the thought was to allow kind of any bona fide quarterback to come up and be your emergency third. And the players union said, no, we don't think that's right. If I have it correct. But I mean, it's just the point being it's evolving as we speak. There are things changing up until the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, look, the league tries not to make massive changes once the season starts. So, and yet they have to be responsive to when a change might be needed. That's, you know, part of what we're dealing with the kickoff rule is, hey, they were going to potentially address that. But, you know, with the rule that you're referring to was a little more nuanced than that is, we still have the ability to elevate a practice squad player to the active roster to be, you know, the third quarterback. What the rule being proposed was that you had an unlimited number of times that you can do that. Right. So we have basically three times where you can elevate a practice squad player to the active roster without signing them to a NFL player contract. The rule proposal was going to say if it was a quarterback that you can do that indefinitely, and that those three elevations didn't count, you know, or didn't apply to the third quarterback. So that's what the NFLPA objected to. So whether you have a active roster third quarterback who you designate as a third, or whether you have a practice squad player who you elevate to have a third, those rules are still the same.
We are speaking with Saints Senior Vice President of Football Operations and Assistant to the General Manager, Kai Harley. And if you kind of look at how the league has kind of moved, it feels like they did some common sense things in the past few years. Most recently, it was always this kind of the teams juggling to do, putting players on IR, having to carry them on the 53, then putting them on the IR. It was kind of a shell game. And it's like the NFL finally said, you know, common sense says, let's let, they're already doing it. And they did. And I applaud it. They said teams can take two players, put them on IR on cut day, and they have to wait 4 weeks. But it just felt like, man, that's kind of good to see that there's some, you know, they see a problem, fix the problem.
Yes, look, that was a very welcome change, because what you're referring to is there was a rule that at the final cut, you know, you might have had two players, three players who you knew you were going to put on IR. But if you put them on IR on the day of the final cut, then they were ineligible to return to you that season. So basically, you would cut somebody who you knew you wanted on the roster, and you would cut them, then wait 2 days, a day and a half, put the other players on injured reserve, and then sign that player back. So if
that person had not gotten signed, so you were putting,
correct.
You were, you know, leveraging somebody, maybe you really wanted on your team and just hoping that he can clear a waiver. So that's what, yes, I mean. It was like, it was unfortunate.
Yeah. You're leveraging the relationship and hoping that the relationship is good enough and the player's vision of where he's at on the roster is good enough that he's not going to sign somewhere, in the interim. In addition to trying to balance out what you just referred to a minute ago when we're talking about dead cap. So, you know, you're not necessarily doing that with somebody that's going to present dead cap issues. So that limits the pool of players that you would look at to think about doing that with. And yet I would say, like, this is a start to addressing some of those things. And there are some other aspects, you know, that we would be, you know, we'd be happy if the league changed. And yet this is a good start. So, you know, it's two players, you know, could it be three, four? You know, two's better than zero. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Incrementally. And that's kind of, we think of, okay, the season starts and everything ends, but it's not. I mean, you know, right before the season, there was, again, it was an issue with practice squads and that kind of emergency third quarterback, and the players union vetoed it like right in late August. So there's, and which basically reverts it back to 2023. And it was, I think the thought was to allow kind of any bona fide quarterback to come up and be your emergency third. And the players union said, no, we don't think that's right. If I have it correct, but I mean, it's just the point being it's evolving as we speak. There are things changing up until the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, look, the league tries not to make massive changes once the season starts. So, and yet they have to be responsive to when a change might be needed. That's, you know, part of what we're dealing with the kickoff rule is, hey, they were going to potentially address that. But, you know, with the rule that you're referring to was a little more nuanced than that is, we still have the ability to elevate a practice squad player to the active roster to be, you know, the third quarterback. What the rule being proposed was that you had an unlimited number of times that you can do that. Right. So we have basically three times where you can elevate a practice squad player to the active roster without signing them to a NFL player contract. The rule proposal was going to say if it was a quarterback that you can do that indefinitely, and that those three elevations didn't count, you know, or didn't apply to the third quarterback. So that's what the NFLPA objected to. So whether you have a active roster third quarterback who you designate as a third, or whether you have a practice squad player who you elevate to have a third, those rules are still the same.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.